for rehearing by appellee. However, the way we normally handle that, appellant is still appellant, so appellant goes first and can reserve rebuttal time. Because the Commonwealth asked for a petition for rehearing, I'm also happy at the end if the Attorney General wants to have an opportunity to briefly rebut too. That's fine with me if it's all right with the panel, because we are in a different position in a petition for rehearing like this than we sometimes are. But Ms. Rosenblatt, you would go first. As you know, both sides have 15 minutes. Would you like to reserve a portion of that 15 minutes for your rebuttal?
Yes, I would, please, Your Honor.
How much?
3 minutes, please.
All right. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. We're here before the Court on an issue which this Court has already made the correct finding, and Lambert v. Commonwealth has no effect on the finding that this Court actually had. I understand that the Commonwealth asked for the rehearing, and one of the things the Court wished us to address a little bit in that rehearing was the overturning of Lambert by the Supreme Court of Virginia. Now, the overruling has no effect on this Court and its ruling in any sort of way, because when Lambert made its decision, it made its decision based on due deference and the actions taken by the teacher in that case. And when this Court made its decision, it based its decision on the issue of the trial court taking into consideration evidence that was never presented to the court in evidence. It was only used for impeachment.
Ms. Rosenblatt, this is Judge Beals. Let me follow up on that, if I may, and I hate to interrupt you, but as you know, your time goes by very quickly in these oral arguments.
Yes.
As you said, in Lambert, the Supreme Court reversed this court, finding that the Court of Appeals did not give sufficient consideration to the trial court's alternative holding. And here in Hart, the trial court had given a basis for its ruling that was clearly outside the record of the evidence before it. When the trial court said, I note one of the teachers indicating the pushing into the machine, I think that constitutes an assault. I do find you're guilty of assault and battery. And that was the basis for our opinion reversing. However, the trial court also seemed to give yet another basis for its ruling when it said, I find the totality of the actions and testimony of the young man, and then there was a brief pause, I do believe the young man. And in his testimony, DeAndre Ware talked of, in at least three places in the transcript that I've noted, he talked about Mr. Hart punched him. Some points he said he pushed and punched me. Other points he said he punched him and in the chest. And there's even a picture in the record of DeAndre that shows some bruising and redness in the upper chest. Given the Supreme Court's decision in Lambert, and even in Velasquez, which is another recent one in late 2016,
yes.
If the trial judge believes DeAndre Ware, don't we have to go back and look at his testimony? And if he says that Mr. Hart punched him, why wouldn't that be an alternative finding upon which we actually then would have to affirm because it is not plainly wrong, given what the court said in Lambert?
I'd like to address that in two parts. The first one is the context of the Mr. Ware stating that he was pushed and punched by Mr. Hart. The times that that's referenced, it's referenced in terms of it acting as one action itself. And this would not be clear. This would not be possible to push and punch something at one in one time. He began with pulling and pushing, and then it led to the idea of a punch.
But he said he felt his fist. And then on page 66, when you were questioning him, that's when he punched you in the teacher's lounge? He said yes. Where did he punch you, you ask him. And then he said, I forgot which chest it was, but it was on my chest.
Well, the bruising, as you can see in the picture, show that the markings go from his chest to his underarm. There's no independent bruising on his chest itself to show that that's what actually happened to his chest. There was no testimony by any experts, anything of that sort, to show that there was independent bruising on the chest. And just because the court states that he believes that the young man is credible does not mean that he believes every single word that the young man testified to.
But he says he says in making his decision, it's rather cryptic, as we talked about the first time this was argued, but he said, I do believe the young man. So if he believes him, he doesn't say he believes him on some but not on others. The punching is something that is totally separate from what anything the teachers talked about. And it's not contradicted by another witness, and yet, and of course we have to, as you yourself noted, we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the party that prevailed below. So again, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but why wouldn't, given the emphasis that the Supreme Court put on alternative findings, why wouldn't this be essentially, we've got to go back and look and see where, what he said that the trial court would have said he was believing?
Well, for alternative findings in Lambert, the court specifically noted that the trial court said that, first of all, I found it unreasonable that you're exceeding the physical contact permitted by the school official, and then went on to say, and even if it was reasonable. So those are two completely separate ideas. The court looked in Lambert at the fact of if he was reasonable and then looked at if he wasn't reasonable. In the case we have before us, the court only laid out one fact. It didn't say, because of this, I now find this, but however, because this might have happened, I found that. The court said totality of the actions and the testimony of the young man, not this was the totality of the actions on its own or the testimony of the young man on its own, because it still has to rise to the level of due deference. And then the transcripts from the trial court itself, I think it's clear that the court believes due deference is allowed in this situation, which it was not allowed in Lambert. The child was making a commotion in the cafeteria. He needed to be brought out. Mr. Ware was making it difficult for him, and he needed to take whatever steps that were necessary in order to get the child out of the cafeteria where there were other forces.
But even if we agree with you on that, Ms. Rosenblatt, we're not the fact finders. The trial court is. And, you know, he doesn't, even putting aside what he said about the teachers, that's totally an aside now. From our decision, when he says, I believe the young man's testimony, wouldn't that include, if he made an allegation of a punch, enough there so that we have to look at that to see if there's enough evidence, essentially, to say that, well, we can't find the trial court plainly wrong here?
Well, if the court is dealing with the issue in terms of harmless error, then the harmless error, it's clear, needs to be shown, as Pitt v. Commonwealth states, that error is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The court must determine whether there is a reasonable possibility that the evidence complained of might have contributed to the conviction, and the court must consider, among other factors, the importance of the tainted evidence in prosecution's case, whether that evidence was cumulative, the presence of or absence of evidence corroborating or contradicting the tainted statement. So I think the most important thing is that the court needs to determine if there's a reasonable possibility that the evidence complained of might have contributed to in any way. So it's not just putting that totally aside. It's if you, with the court's decision, you're required to look at it through the court's decision, but in terms of whether you overrule that, you have to see if the court in any way, the trial court in any way, used that evidence to contribute to its conviction. And clearly in this situation, it did contribute to its conviction because he noted that. So for the court to say,
but in Lambert, the Supreme Court is telling us essentially that if you've got an alternative finding or other evidence in the record that the trial court relied on, or perhaps even if they didn't specifically mention it, that if it's there, we have an obligation to affirm the trial court if there is another basis on which to do so.
But because the other
appellate court. We're not a fact finder.
Well, then, if the question, and correct me if I'm wrong, is if due deference was, if the actions taken by Mr. Hart rose over the level of due deference, then I would disagree, because the actions taken, and I may be misunderstanding your question, and please correct me if I am, but the due deference that was...
You're talking about due deference to him as a school employee, right?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, as a school employee.
But I'm talking about due deference to the trial court's factual findings.
But their factual finding on its own, even believing the child himself, does not mean that he would find beyond a reasonable doubt that my client was guilty of these charges, because he never dealt with the due deference that was allowed to my client because he was a school official. He didn't address that issue specifically.
Let me ask you this, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think this is really important. If we believe, if the trial court believed and found, essentially, by believing his testimony, that Mr. Hart punched DeAndre Ware, and there is a picture showing bruising, as we talked about a little while ago, that would seem to corroborate something happened in that area of the chest as it goes into the underarm area, as you mentioned. Why should we, as an appellate court, overturn the trial court?
Because the appellate court would have to look at the issue of due deference, which was taken into consideration by the lower court in addition to the teacher's statement. So this appellate court needs to say if on its own the court would have found due deference just by the juvenile statements alone. And due deference was not found by the juvenile statements alone, and this court wouldn't be able to find it. I understand the court is concerned about the issue of the punch or the push or anything like that that got the child into the cafeteria, but the responsibility was to get the student out of the cafeteria and out of the hallway where he was pushing all of his weight down on his feet to make sure he couldn't be moved.
I'm sure that made it very difficult for Mr. Hart, and certainly, as you can tell from the previous opinion, I have some understanding and some empathy for that, quite frankly, but given Lambert from the Supreme Court and Velasquez that came out in late 2016 too, I'm having difficulty, if we're supposed to look at all of DeAndre Ware's testimony based on what the trial court said, I do believe the young man, to see if, you know, there's this pretty strong allegation of not just dragging or pulling, but a punch and then bruising.
Well, with Lambert, the situation for that, the juvenile was not causing a commotion to start it. So one of the things that Lambert dealt with and mentioned was that it was an unreasonable response for Lambert, because the child had just dropped the book bag down and the teacher then wanted him to go back and pick the book bag up. So that was looking at the reasonableness of the situation. And in Lambert, there was no reason for the child to be grabbed, for the child to be moved. In this situation, the child was first asked and was tried to be let out of the cafeteria, and the child was the one that put up the fight. It didn't start with the child just being unreasonable in the cafeteria or in the case of Lambert outside, but the court also found that, which doesn't apply here, I think is it's understood, is that Lambert did not afford the due deference that's allowed to teachers. So the Lambert...
I don't mean to interrupt you because you're making important points, but I do want to let you know you're starting to go into your rebuttal time.
Then I would ask for the court to allow me to either finish your question now or allow me to stop.
Absolutely. You may continue on, and I just wanted to note that, but please
thank
continue.
But I just wanted to make that one fact, is that's why it's different, because in Lambert there was no due deference, but also it was an unreasonable action that was taken. And here, it was not unreasonable. It was comparable to what the child was doing and what was necessary, as opposed to a child just dropping a book bag down. And I would like to use my remaining time to speak after the Commonwealth.
Thank you, Ms. Rosenblatt. I had a lot of questions for you, so I certainly, you have your rebuttal time. Ms. Darren?
Yes, Your Honors, may it please the court, I first want to thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to revisit the decision in this case based on the intervening decision by the Virginia Supreme Court in Lambert. In that case, which interprets the very statute that we have at issue in this case, it gives that case in reversing this court's decision gave us a new lens, if you will, to look at particularly interpreting the code section in question, but also it highlighted, I think, the standard of review and specifically deals with alternative findings of the trial court and on appeal, what is the appellate court's obligation or duty, if you will, when finding one alternative may be wrong, and another alternative would result in the upholding of the conviction. So I think the decision is very important, and whether you look at it as the court making specific alternative findings or not, or just the idea of what is the duty of the appellate court on appeal, and that is the Virginia Supreme Court's opinion in Lambert points up that it's the court's obligation to look at the evidence in its totality in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, and the court is not limited to the findings of the court or even the arguments of the parties. The judgment on appeal is to be affirmed so long as there is any basis in the record to support it. And
so, Ms. Barron, this Judge Beal says, when the court says, I find the totality of the actions and testimony of the young man, and he says, I do believe the young man, is it your argument that we really need to look at all the young man's testimony at that point and see what is said and take it as believed by the trial judge?
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe the court's finding on that credibility determination is absolutely unequivocal. He says, I do believe the young man, and the young man, the young boy, the 10-year-old boy says, when he was in the teacher's lounge, that I'm going to call him a teacher, that the teacher punched him in the chest, that he shoved him and punched him at the same time, that he pushed him, and then he had his fist on him. And the boy specifically said, in the chest, and then as the court has already recognized, there are photographs in the record supporting that testimony. Of course, I believe the boy's testimony alone would have been a credibility determination based on the boy's testimony alone would have been sufficient to support the conviction. But on appeal, but in this case, we have that additional corroborating evidence. The court specifically said, unequivocally, I do believe the young man. And the boy says he was punched in the chest. This is not reasonable force. Any argument with regard to what kind of force was reasonable, those are arguments that were appropriate for the trial court to hear.
Ms. Barron, yes. Can I interrupt you for a second just to ask you, Ms. Rosenblatt says that the picture would indicate really no more necessarily than what everybody knows, and that is that when DeAndre Ware was resisting being taken from the cafeteria into the hall and then into the teacher's lounge, he was kind of grabbing onto the wall and pushing his feet into the floor so that he had to be lifted up under his arms and chest, so therefore the bruising could have come from simply that lifting and pulling, if you will, to get him in the teacher's lounge and out of that narrow hall where all those little first graders had to walk afterwards. How do you respond to the bruising could potentially be no more than that?
In the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, giving the evidence all reasonable inferences on appeal, that bruising comes from the punch to the chest. Her argument would have been appropriate were she arguing in the trial court, But those ambiguities at this juncture are not something that upon which this court can reverse the conviction on appeal.
Because there was testimony that there was from DeAndre that there was a punch and then there's bruising, that's really enough.
Absolutely, Your Honor. That his testimony, independent and standing alone, is enough to support the conviction on appeal. And addressing the court's statement, first of all, I think you could look at the court's statement. It's certainly not unequivocal. I note one of the teachers indicating pushing into the machine. It's certainly not unequivocal as the court's previous statement, I do believe the young man. So I have that, you know, the statement taken in context is ambiguous, but even if it weren't, even if it were flat wrong, then Lambert teaches that we look at the alternative finding. And we uphold the judgment if there is evidence to support the alternative finding. And that evidence in this case is the punch to the chest. And also, I would like to point out that this finding came in without objection. And I know that defense counsel did make a motion to reconsider at page 5 of the record. And this was not an issue that counsel raised to ask the court to address this inconsistency in the testimony and in the court's finding, excuse me. And so I think not only do we have independent evidence upon which the conviction should be sustained, we have no objection to this wrong finding, and so I don't believe it's appropriate for it to be considered as a basis for reversal on appeal. Certainly what the judge said, our position is that what the judge said about the machine refrigerator is not outcome determinative. When the appellate court is to look at the totality of the evidence and affirm the judgment on any basis supported by the record. And again, the judge said, I do believe the boy, and the boy said he was punched in the chest, and the boy said that the teacher used his fist. So we ask that the court reconsider and affirm the judgment of the trial court, and I thank you for this opportunity to re-argue the case.
Any further questions for Ms. Darren?
No, thank you.
All right, Ms. Rosenblatt, you have your rebuttal time.
I would just like to clarify a few things stated by the Commonwealth. She stated that the markings and the bruising on the chest was from the punch to the chest, and there was no doctor, there was no one to say that specific bruising came from an independent punch on the chest. If you look at it, it leads all the way to the underarms, and it's not consistent with the idea that was an independent punch. And in terms of how hard that was, there's nothing to show that it caused the bruise itself. There's nothing to show that it wasn't just a punch back in a way with a fist. We're not talking, there's no evidence that there was a full-fledged swing at this boy in any way. It was not defined. So the fact that the idea of a general punch has not been identified, and it was not identified at that time, especially since Mr. Ware stated punched and pushed at the same time. And that would be impossible to take that full-fledged swing and push the child at one time. The Commonwealth also keeps arguing about an alternative finding, but this was all one finding. There isn't an alternative finding like there was in the other cases where the court noted this would be the situation here and this would be the situation here.
Can I ask on that, Ms. Rosenblatt? I mean, it may not be an alternative holding, but why isn't it an alternative finding? It seems very different from his talking about the teacher indicating the pushing into the machine. That seems to be a very separate line of analysis, but when he talks about the totality, and then he says, I do believe the young man's testimony, why don't we need to look back just at the young man's testimony to see if there is an alternative? Why isn't that an alternative factual finding?
It's not an alternative factual finding because the young man's statements itself would not create a totality of the circumstances. So the court is taking into consideration other things, and it's unknown because he chooses only to mention these two items. So the other things that are being taken into consideration, it's not known, and it's not understood if it was just that teacher's action statements in terms of pushing the young man into the machine, or if it was other issues as well. And the court still didn't come back to the issue of whether, without the idea and just the boy's statement, that due deference would not now apply. Well, it did apply, but not at this point, just with the boy's statement. Due deference was used, and it wasn't used, it wasn't overbroad. It was done with what the school official, Mr. Hart, was allowed to do. That was never examined by the court itself, and I think that's the issue, is if the Court of Appeals chooses to take aside the statement of the teacher, then it needs to look at whether the child's statement alone, whether that is Mr. Hart stepped over his rights of due deference. And if we're only dealing with a punching, the punching itself has never specifically been described in terms of a punch versus a push, even with a closed fist, because like I said before, it would be impossible to make that full swing. And there was, I would argue, no independent bruising just on the chest itself. So there was nothing to show that Mr. Hart in any way stepped over his rights of getting the child out of the cafeteria and into the teacher's lounge. And I believe at this point my time has run out. Unless anyone has any additional questions, I would be happy to answer, but I would thank the court for this opportunity.
Any further questions for Ms. Rosenblatt?
No questions.
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Rosenblatt. I did mention at the beginning that because this was a petition for rehearing by the Commonwealth, even though the Commonwealth is not appellant, I would give the Commonwealth a final opportunity to briefly rebut. If you would like to do so, Ms. Darren, you may proceed.
Your Honors, I think the court understands my position in this case, and we submit to the court.
Right. All right. Thank you, Ms. Darren. Thank you, Ms. Rosenblatt.
Thank you.
We appreciate the argument by both of you and the time you've put into this case, and the court will now go into conference, and we will be back with you.